Welcome to the Body Grievers Club. Hi, my friends. I'm Bree.
And I'm Jana.
And we want to sit in the grief and the suck of your body image with you.
But we also want to show you that even in the suck, you can still live a great life in the body that you have right now.
And that no matter how big and how difficult your body grief feels,
you are not alone.
Hey, Jana.
Hey, Bree.
I realized too late that people must have looked at our podcast last week and thought, who is this beautiful lady next to Bree? And so I figure we should introduce you. So introduce yourself to the Body Grievers Club.
Well, thank you so much. I am super happy to be part of the Body Grievers Club because body image and the relationship with ourselves and our bodies couldn't be more important to me. I've been coaching for it's 14 years now,
wow.
15, I think. Some of that wasn't body image coaching. I've been body image coaching specifically for about the last 4 years, and it's just become more and more of a passion. And as you know, where I've been a lead body image coach, body image with Bree.
You are such an amazing asset to the Body Grievers. And I know that we just love you and the podcast is going to love you too. And it's more fun to do it together. And we have
absolutely,
we have good chemistry.
We always have a party.
Jana's favorite color is sparkle. I think that's the moment that I was like, oh, we're going to be friends for a long time. She's like, my favorite color is sparkle. I'm like, yes, we need that energy. So there's a lot of episodes that we recorded a while ago and we're going to put them out. And then there's going to be episodes with you and me. And then there's going to be episodes with you. And there's going to be episodes with just me. And so this episode today, tell them what the episode is on today.
The episode is about knowing your worth.
Yeah. I actually interviewed my bookkeeper, Kelly, who is a graduate of the Body Grievers Group. And she talks about how being an entrepreneur and seeing worth and value come up. I mean, we talk about this all the time as entrepreneurs, but how would you say that like worth and value comes up for body grievers?
Typically, some of the patterns that I see is some low self-esteem, mm-hmm. right? Because of our bodies and the things that we've learned about it. And people usually start to step into our worlds when they realize that, like, changing their body isn't going to work. Okay. Like, it's not fruitful. It's not working how they need to work. We've usually been on a million diets, right? And they're coming in kind of saying, like, there's got to be a different way. But what I love is at that point, there starts to get this little seed planted about, like, I must be worth this on some level. I must be worth doing something different that actually contributes to my well-being.
I love that. And I don't think it makes it any easier. Like, it still sucks.
Oh, yeah. It wanted to come suck because you don't have that same hope all the time, right? But yeah. Something different starts to grow that replaces that, like, false hope that, like, this is going to be it.
Right.
This is going to be a thing that's going to make me feel better about myself.
And in, like, body grief language, it's for folks moving from, if you're familiar with the stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And so often I think we want to just move right into the acceptance, like, let's just get there. And I find that many folks that are coming into our community are really still bargaining. Maybe I can still fix this.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Going back and forth, flip-flopping.
And then when they come, they're like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready to sit in the suck. I'm ready to be sad about it. And what do? We sit in the sadness with them. And so we invite you to come listen to this episode with Kelly Marshall. It'll be a great quick listen. I did want to let podcast listeners know at the time of this recording, two things. So first and foremost, at the time of this recording, I have a masterclass coming up on sales. It's on how to make the perfect pitch to your audience without those sleazy sales strategies. And I just think, especially as an entrepreneur, I didn't know how to market and sell my programs. I didn't know that there was a difference between marketing and sales. So it's been fun. And so that's coming up soon at the end of this month. And then I also wanted to share that Body Image with Brie, featuring Jana, we have a program called The Vault that is coming out in August. It is going to be for both body grievers and providers. And it is really going to be a tool to help you shift from body grief to body acceptance. So if you are interested in learning about the program, we invite you to get on the wait list, which can be found in the show notes. And that's the only place that you can get on the wait list as of right now. We invite you to come do that. And so without further ado, let's get to this episode. Hello, and welcome back to the Body Grievers Club. I am so honored for today's guest, my friend, my colleague, and my personal bookkeeper for my business, Kelly Marshall. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Me too. Kelly and I agree on many things, including our shared Enneagram number. Do we also share the same money archetype?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have to link that in the show notes. Kelly has on her website this amazing money archetype quiz that was so helpful. And I asked her to come on the podcast today because one of the things that I realized in my own journey to body acceptance was unlearning my stories around money. And so a little bit of our journey together, we connected on Instagram land. I remember seeing your caption or your title, your biography, and it was like financial wellness coach. And I remember being like, ooh, I need that.
Love it.
And so tell us a little bit about, the work that you do and how you got into that. Like, tell us why you love numbers.
Oh, gosh. It's such a nerdy thing. And this tends to come up in these types of things. And I get a little embarrassed, but I can't help but share that I knew I wanted to be an accountant in seventh grade. So what kid wants to be an accountant in seventh grade? But I did. And, so it was very clearly my path. But then I went through college. I always did well in it, went and started in the corporate world in a bank. And yet there was always this thing pulling at me. And I honestly don't think you know any of this story. During that time, I kept getting pulled to more of a holistic path. I almost went to massage school and actually was registered and switched over to a bookkeeping course at the last minute. Like, I needed that after a 4-year degree. But anyway, I did. And then a few years later, I was still always being pulled back there. I got trained in Reiki and more of the energy healing work. I've actually got a certification in holistic nutrition, which I may or may not have ever told you. So it was this other path that was very much in the nurturing, coaching, energy type space. And so it was always this, felt like two parallel lines in my life. There was the career that was very linear, very accounting. I loved to balance things and really dig into the numbers. And then this other more holistic side. And there was my last job before having the business was at a wellness center. And I was doing some coaching, but also doing their books. And that was really kind of the birth of the business. There were a lot of ugly body image stuff that came out of that job. But the gift I got was the birth of this business. And so it was working with people that I really love to work with, but supporting them in this skill set that I developed over years and years and tried to escape a number of times and never could. And I also discovered during that time how much it was needed in this space, like the support of a bookkeeper. And honestly, one of my gifts, I feel like, is holding a judgment-free space. So providing a space without shame for people to clear it. I can't clear your shame, but I can hold the space for you and love you through it and help you see it in a different light, those things that you're carrying shame around. And so that's one of the things I love most about what I do and who I work with and why I work with who I work with. And it was a journey and a pathway to get here.
That's I for sure. love that. And I believe I didn't know that. Well, it's funny too, because right, so as an Enneagram 2, are you familiar with your Myers-Briggs as well? Like,
I can't remember it anymore, but it's definitely, I'm definitely an extrovert. It's definitely in the feeling and the intuition side, but there's pieces I forget. I never remember the
actual intuition. I'm an ENFJ. And I feel like, I think I was telling you this.
That might be it too.
Recording. So the J part is like the Enneagram 3 in me that just loves organization. But because I'm neurodivergent, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because like I think of people who like math and I'm like, I don't relate to you.
Yeah.
I'm such a feeler. And, you know, so a little bit about my story is, you know, a little bit more of like that unraveling of when I stopped having hurdles around being an expert in body grief. It went right into my business of, but you can't charge for your services. Like, you're a helper. How dare you ask people to compensate you for your time and labor? And there were times where I'm like, I wish I was just an accountant where I could be like, this is my fee. And nobody is like, well, do you have a sliding scale? And so there's these competing values of like, I want to take care and I want to nurture and I want to help. And I also need to be able to pay my team and I need to be able to pay myself, that there's so much unpaid labor that goes into specifically the online coaching.
I just want to clear one thing up.
Please.
As a nurturer, as a type two or a nurturer, whatever we want to talk about it, it didn't matter what you were offering. You were always going to have that feeling. So, because as an accountant, even though it's even the bookkeeping part of my services is such a clear cut thing, you can't help your little nurturing heart to want to help everybody. So I understand. So where the difference really is that you're pricing kind of your intellectual capital. It's like a non-tangible value piece where it really comes down to the value of something people can't put in a box, you know? And so that's where the challenge really comes into. And that does make it a little easier with bookkeeping or somebody selling a product. It's very easy to price a product, but it's not so easy to price a service, especially a service of your heart, especially a service of your heart working with people that you could not care more about than you do. It's not easy.
Yes. And it's definitely a nature of the beast in many ways.
Yeah.
And I feel like, especially working with you, I've just even seen like new growth in myself in being okay with charging my worth.
Yeah.
And I think that pre-Kelly, it was just like, I have these arbitrary prices that I don't really know why they're here. And I know why I'm making these programs and I know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And while on the surface, it looks like it's a helper value.
Yeah.
Actually was a self-esteem wound of I can get you to love me by making myself accessible at the cost of myself, which in the nurse,
that was like a mic drop right there.
I don't know what I said.
I'll capture every word, but a self-esteem wound where you're looking for acceptance by making it acceptable, even at the cost of yourself. So like that is a super nurturer wrapped up in some self-confidence wound statement. And I guarantee that there's so many people that heard you say that were like, oh, like I get that, right? Yeah. They probably do it in jobs and all over different places. Like, because nurturers in general overgive in spite of ourselves. But when you add in that self-confidence wound, I actually have a little exercise. I wasn't planning to do that today. But before we finish up today, I just want to share a little exercise that can help unwind that. But I don't want to go there just yet because I want to kind of, if we could, explore this a little bit more.
Yeah. And I'll try and remember that you want to close up with an exercise.
Yeah.
But even that word exercise and like around money, I'm like,
that's a good one. Oh, gosh. Well, it's funny, too, because what you had said about kind of the arbitrary pricing, obviously, this is a podcast, so we can't provide a picture of this. But one of the things you and I do is get very linear with your numbers. So we and this is something I just do. Some of my clients call it the magic spreadsheet. But when we're trying to figure out the numbers, I put it into a spreadsheet. Sometimes it's just the pricing. Sometimes we're looking at the pricing against your expenses, and that can help give you a different perspective. And I bet you some people are cringing even hearing spreadsheet, which is part of where like the nurturing piece comes in. Like, you know, it's not so scary when somebody else is driving in the spreadsheet and you're watching, but we get very linear with it. And there's something about looking at your numbers in that way that detaches some of the emotion, I feel like, but in a good way. And it allows you to get a little perspective, because if we're specifically now tying your programs and offers to your goals, and we can see them in a formula way where we can't get crazy with a calculator and weird numbers and all in our head, it starts to make sense and it starts to become less emotional and more, I don't even want to say strategic, but just more clear and more.
It becomes informative, right?
Yeah, there, I like that.
This is the same thing that I talk about to body grievers, is that if your body image story has a narrative that you're telling yourself, is that narrative true or is it information? Mm-hmm. And the same thing can be said for your money. And so I knew that like my relationship with money was a little bit like a diet in many ways, where I would hoard my money and then I would binge because I restricted for so long. And I didn't really know conceptually, like, what would it be like to think of like food abundance, like money abundance. And I get a little judgy, which is my own stuff, when people get like super woo and they're like, just abundance mindset. I'm like, no, like I'm here for it. But like, I know we've talked about the one quote recently that's really moved me, is the Brené Brown quote of the opposite of scarcity is not abundance. The opposite of scarcity is enough. And what does it look like to have enough?
Yeah. And
there was no time in my life where I ever had enough money, even when I had more than enough, because of the scarcity mindset that I have. Yeah. And I mean, I believe a lot of that is my family and my parents, but a lot of it also came back to that self-esteem of like, I could not picture myself as being somebody who didn't have to worry about money.
Yeah. 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 Let's talk about that. Remind me to go back to trust too, because that just was like a little hit I got as you were saying that. But what you just said is so important. Can you picture yourself as somebody who has money? And I'm even going to use a term that can be a little triggery for people, which is revealing in and of itself. So if you get triggered by the term I use, it's something, it's an opportunity to explore it, not to get upset, but explore it. When my first connection, because I was in money all my life, I already went through my background, looking at numbers and things like that is easy for me. That doesn't mean that my money work is easy for me. And that, you know, just because I'm good at balancing the books or know how to do my own checkbook doesn't mean I don't love to spend and things like that. So I just want to make that clear. And so I've done a lot of my own money work. So of course, anything that we offer, we usually have done the work ourselves, or hopefully we've done the work ourselves. And the first connection I had to body image and money work was when I was asked the question, what does a wealthy woman look like? And do you look like a wealthy woman? Can I identify as a wealthy woman? Brené Brown helps me a lot with that one as well, since you already mentioned her. But I had this vision of, there's this little town in our area that, like, that's where the wealthy people live. And I had this picture of a woman that would go to the one salon in that town. She was thin. She was white. She had blonde hair cut the same way that they all had the same haircut. And it didn't look like me. She didn't look like me. And so I had to unwind what I had defined as a wealthy woman, so that if I'm going to meet my goals, which certainly was wealth and, you know, being able, being financially secure and things like that. That was a part of the identity that I was working on. But if I couldn't connect that, if I couldn't see myself as being financially secure and wealthy, how could I ever attain that? And so I had to really get clear, where did that come from? And then look for evidence of people who do look like me, who have attained wealth. And certainly we have them out there, but at that time, it just wasn't, I didn't accept that in my brain, you know? So that was a huge part of my money work that I really had to check. And this can come up in so many places for people. You know, they might, like, money's evil, you know, and those things are selfish or that stuff that comes up. It also could be wealth isn't for me, you know, or again, I don't see myself as a wealthy woman. So there's a lot of ways that can pop up. So whatever came up for people, I didn't say it to be triggery, but I said it as a, you know, an opportunity to start your own exploration with that.
Yeah. So this thought, you know, politics aside, right, as somebody who is a nurturer and a giver, my greatest fear, especially in business, is like, I don't want to be a capitalistic sellout. Like, I just don't want to be a person who hoards wealth for my own. And so by taking your money, the money archetype quiz, which I know you said is someone else's, and realizing, oh, like, I can shift how I see money rather than like as money as evil, right? And so even from like my religious upbringing of like, it's not money that's the root of all evil. It is the love of money that is the root of all evil. And when I tell people,
even that, I'm even reject that one a little bit, but
right. But what I'll tell people all the time is like, I'm like, money is fake. Like, it's just not real. Like,
it's not.
You're just numbers.
It's just a tool. It's a tool in the hands of the person who is holding it. And I'll tell you, that's why I do what I do, because the people I work with are conscious business owners. The people I work with are purpose-driven people. The people I want more money in the hands of are people like you. And my other clients and all conscious business owners out there, because you know what? You're making a direct impact to the people you're helping. Or in your case, you're helping other helpers help more people. And therefore, with a goal of, you know, expanding that impact and healing more people. I want you to be successful and wealthy, because not only are you going to be able to reach more people, but you're going to be able to hire people who want to do the same thing. And they may not want to be an entrepreneur, and that's okay. But you can support them, and they're a good person with money. And not only just money in your business, but then you go out and you make a direct impact in your community. Mm-hmm. You know, that's who I want money in the hands of. And so I'm really passionate about changing what that wealthy woman looks like. Not that I'm judging the skinny blonde woman in my little town next door, but, you know, but I want it spread out and I want it into the hands of the helpers.
Well, I don't 100%. Know if you've ever felt this, because I know you said with leaving your last place of employment that like there were some ugly body image stuff that came up for you. For me, it's like I used to believe no one's going to take you seriously in your profession. And those gremlins are now of like, what do you know? Like, how can you help somebody with business? You're no business coach. You're no business helper. And truly, you don't have to call me a business coach. And people might think, why is this part of your funnel? And it all comes back to the same thing. I like to help people. And if I can be the coach that I needed when I started, my job is done. And that more people like me will be making an impact in the long run. And that to me is beautiful.
It truly is about turning around, reaching out your hand and helping somebody else, right? I mean, that's truly what you're doing. And I also, this was not the intention of this, but I can't help myself. I don't know as many people who are as authentic in their marketing and things as you. And I love that. I mean, knowing you is like I do now, and having followed you before, I guess we haven't said that. I followed Bree for a long time. I did one of her programs, you know, before we even started working together. And she is exactly who she is in all of those interactions. And that's another part of like, I want more real people out in the world helping people, you know? And so I love the idea that you're teaching other people to market like you do and uncover their own money stuff the way that you do, help your people in your programs and all kinds of stuff.
In my face, I'm like, oh my God.
She's like, stop, stop.
Words of affirmation, which I love, but don't let me help you first. I was with a lot of you this weekend and it was like, I'm being out-tuned right now. Like, I'm not how to handle this. I really appreciate that. And I think about gatekeeping of like, I think entrepreneurship is not for everybody. I don't think everybody should or can be an entrepreneur. You have to be able to deal with stress and decisions and people hating you and being mad at you. And it sucks. And there is that flip side, as you also have the ability to create impact and change. And Rachel Rogers, whom we both admire, says that women who make money invest 90% back into their homes and community.
Yeah.
While conversely, men invest only about 30.
Yes.
I can't even imagine knowing what I know and then being like, I'm going to keep this all to myself.
Right.
If I can't.
No.
I'm like, want to shout it from the rooftops. If it that money mindset, that scarcity mindset is probably coming up in other ways. And that if you can trust yourself, then you can learn to trust your money and your money decisions.
Honestly, a lot of money shame, the money struggle comes from that lack of trust. And it's almost like the chicken or the egg though, because like the shame is what then perpetuates the lack of trust. And it's the trusting piece is a big part of the worthiness piece. It's, if you don't trust yourself with your money, then you don't feel worthy of making more because you won't take good care of it. Or you might feel like, oh my gosh, I don't want to be responsible for all that, because then when I lose it all or I spend it all, then I'm going to feel even worse. It's like a really tricky little spot. So learning to build your trust, being willing to do the work, looking to unwind those stories, and really building your trust in yourself is key to this work. And sometimes that comes from getting help. Sometimes it comes from just taking a look at the money, which is really hard for a lot of people. I want to touch, there's so many different places I want to go to, but the one was the part where you talked about, it made me think of alchemists. And I can't remember exactly what words you use, but it was something to do with attaching money to the services and being a helper. And that's a real tricky spot. And I guarantee there's a lot of people in your audience that have trouble with that. It's kind of like the starving artist thing, but in a different place. But like how artists can take on that identity of like the struggling artist. And the same thing can happen with the helper and the healer, or, you know, if people are into the spiritual work or even in like the nutrition, like who am I to charge for that? And they care so much about their service, and it truly is a service of their heart, that when they start to attach a price to it, it feels icky. And where it goes back to that mindset of me wanting money in the hands of those that really are conscious and care and purpose driven, is the better you do, the better you can help others do. And so we do need people to kind of forge that path and make the money and turn around and put their hand down and help people up and build this community where this is okay. And we do want people, the helpers and healers, to do well with their money and help others do well. And so I really just wanted to go back to that and give a little bit more mindset around that piece.
And what I can say too is like coming full circle, right? So it's like knowing that I'm struggling with this thing, which was money, and never feeling like I had enough, feeling like it was like a diet, but then needing to ask for help, which as a helper, I just innately reject. I don't like asking for help.
Because you don't feel like you get your value when you're the one asking for help. You like provide the help.
I should be the expert. I should know all of the things. Yeah. And like the first time I saw you do a spreadsheet, I was like, yep, nope, I don't have that skill at all. I have lied on many resumes saying I had Excel experience. I do not.
Good to know.
Absolutely. I thought I did, but no, definitely did not.
That's what you have me for.
And so needing to ask for help, but needing to be able to set time boundaries, needing to be able to set price boundaries, needing to be able to set client boundaries, like these larger scaled issues were evident from my money mindset. That the when I realized, oh wow, like okay, there are people who are going to pay me what price point I set, and those that aren't, I don't have to do free labor for them or extra labor. No. And that if I do, that's how the resentment is bred.
Yeah.
Because I'm over getting beyond my capacity.
It's a typical pattern for that, the helper, the nurturer, is to overgive in spite of ourselves and then go to a resentment. But I just want to offer too, because that's a blend of that alchemist nurturer, is that accessibility and wanting to give. And I always like to remind you when we talk about it is you give so many free things out there. You create a community and you provide a lot of things. And so do a lot of other people who are in that space. Like, I guess I'm speaking to pricing for entrepreneurs, which is not necessarily what we're talking about, but you provide value in many ways. And that's how you serve people that aren't ready to join your other paid programs. Or you can find ways down the road, once all your needs are met and taken care of, you can look into other ways to provide things. But there's plenty out there that you give away for free and or very accessibly, that there's a difference between that and your higher level services.
And I think that can be relatable to the school teacher, to the stay-at-home mom. Like, I have stay-at-home mom friends who people just assume, oh, well, you're stay-at-home. Can you do this for me? And it comes back to that ability to say, I'm so sorry, I can't. But why? You work from home. Yes, I work from home. I have a full-time job and it is my family. Or again, not to get political, but like teachers who have to go well beyond the expectation of their contracts, how to be okay with ruffling feathers. And Glennon Doyle has this quote, and it says, like, if you have the option to disappoint yourself or someone else, it is your job to disappoint someone else. Mm-hmm. Because nobody is going to do that for you. And as nurturers, we think,
well, that's the hardest thing in the world.
Someone will do that for me. No.
Yeah, it's huge. Can we go back to the diet mentality for a second?
Please.
Because this is a big thing for me. And this is something I actually get asked a lot to do to support people on the personal side, because my specialty is on the business side. And I do believe that if we don't take care of our personal finances, it bleeds from the business. And so they're important. But I'm not a budget person. It's the same way I'm not a diet person anymore. Mm-hmm. And I punished myself with both for a long time. To every single diet you could name, and you know, doing the different budgeting methods, even Dave Ramsey and things like that, that now I don't believe in anymore. And I've had to unwind it. And it really does come from that, like that restriction to binge cycle. And for a lot of us, it will show up in our money. If it shows up in our eating, it will often show up in our money. And so what I would say for that, to get away from that budgeting mentality, is really get clear on your values. And because that's another piece that layers in too, when we come to budgeting, we feel like we have to follow somebody else's percentages or somebody else's viewpoint. Like, we might feel like we can't go out to eat or we can't spend a lot of money on food. That's a quick place that people will cut back money, a rice and beans diet, if you will. But that can lead to so many deprivation and health issues and all kinds of things. What if somebody really values spending money there? You know, versus other things that they're happy to sacrifice on. And so it's really getting clear on what your values are, what's important to you, the type of spender you want to be, what you want to focus on, and make it your own personal purpose, like intuitive eating or whatever you want to say. It's like, make it important to you. And it becomes much easier to meet your goals and to understand that you're not sacrificing, you're not shortchanging yourself, you're not just providing restriction, you're really aligned with who you are and what's important to you. And that just shifts everything with our relationship with money.
Amazing. Is it you that says to me, like, get out of other people's wallets?
Yeah, that's one that came from. So the person that did the Sacred Money Archetype, just to give her credit, is Kendall Summerhawk, and I've been certified in her program. And she's got a couple of really good ones. And that's one of them, is like, it's none of your business what's in their wallet. Get out of their wallet. And that can come, I apply that to entrepreneurs when we're doing pricing. Like, it's none of our business whether or not they can afford it. Our price is our price. And we share that with them. And you have to hold them as resourceful enough to find that if they want it. And if they don't, we have lots of ways we're serving people for free, right? That goes back to the other piece. But it can also come from judgment. You know, if we're judging other people for our money, that can often be that mirror piece. Like, we're judging them because we're feeling not confident about what we're doing. And it's really not our business. If they value travel or they value organic food and you don't value the same things, they're going to spend their money differently, which gets really hard when you're in a couple or your mom and kids or, you know, whatever the relationships are where we have to deal with that money. It becomes important to really get clear on their values and their alignment, what's important to them. Think about our kids, you know, what's important to them. Like, we can't just hammer down with our values. We have to understand where they come from, or we're going to pass on some money issues.
Yeah. It's like, it's the same with like dieting, right? Where it's like that, those scarcity mindset issues are going to just keep coming up, whether they are generational or whether they are individual. And right. The one thing I want to make sure that I reference here is like being able to acknowledge privilege and knowing that there's definitely a level of privilege that comes with entrepreneurship for sure. And so what I'm going to recommend for people is to follow people like Rachel Rogers, who has built a multi-million dollar business on an idea alone. Another person who I really enjoy following, Christine Diane Thompson, who is a money mindset coach. I mean, I loved the idea of money mindset, thinking like, yeah, I definitely have some mindset issues. What I can tell you as a coach myself is that your mindset around money probably comes up in other places as well. And so how would you speak to, you know, the privilege, like if someone is listening to us and it's like, oh, well, you're just privileged, even though both of us have our own marginalized identities in many ways, we still also have privilege.
Sure. Sure. It's a tough one. We have to honor that for one, and that, you know, we have to acknowledge it. I want to go there. What's coming up for me just for a moment that I want to talk about is like current reality. Like, so somebody that is either struggling in debt or is in a situation where there is no extra, like rice and beans is already where it's at and there is nothing extra. It's a really tough thing when it comes to money mindset of like not gaslighting yourself for your current circumstances, but also knowing that there's other things that are possible. And that is where it gets really challenging. And I'm trying to think myself of how, because I'm so often coming at it from that entrepreneurial lens where somebody's already in a business. And so I'm coming at it from that place. So I'm trying to correct myself a little bit in the moment to how I would speak to somebody that's not in that frame of mind. So I need to process that a little bit, to be totally fair.
It comes to of like, how does your individual mindset around money impact your daily functioning? Mm-hmm. And if money isn't something that you can be firm on, can you be firmer on boundaries? Is that a possibility? And are there resources that you can access to be able to have better boundaries? You know, again, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. And I have a list of like programs on my phone that if somebody wants to create this business, like a Plant Murders Anonymous Club, I would be your number one client because I murder all of my plants. Or I'm like, okay, I ask my Instagram because I'm like, is it okay? Like, what am I? I need somebody who's an expert in that. And I think that the more we become entrepreneurial in things that we already know, not things that we need to have degrees in, not things that we need qualifications in, but things that you are already good at. Even like when you're talking about like the neurodivergent, I'm sure there's somebody who's like, I love scheduling. I am a, like the queen of scheduling. Come help me. I can't schedule.
Yeah. If we want to talk about versus the privilege, I'm still going to work on that. I might come back and come up with something for your Instagram piece because my brain is still going, but which just show you my privilege. But the ways to find extra money, I could do that one all day long. And it does come down to like, I've been the person hustling, selling wild raspberries from the woods, which may sound privileged in and of itself, but going and picking raspberries and selling them at the end of the driveway, or going and digging out some of my plants and selling them at the driveway. Or we used to flip stuff at our flea market. And so there are lots of ways. I think I don't like this necessarily love this person all the time, but Gary Vee, if you've ever followed any of this stuff, he does talk about
problematic and I enjoy
it. I know there's things I don't love about him, but one of the things he talks about is you can go and people are giving stuff away for free that you can then sell, and you can flip your money that way. So there are things that can be done to change our situation with money, but there's still a reality of a lot of situations where it's either time or money, or where there's restrictions and limitations. But I loved what you said about there's always places that we can look at in our current situation that little shifts will improve things for us, be it boundaries with our time, with how people are treating us, with maybe it's in our business with clients. There's just so many different places that we could address. And if you start there, and by no means am I meaning to gaslight anybody's current reality. But I do know for sure that if we look at our current reality and say it will never be different than this, then it will never be different than this. So
that's a hard, it's a hard.
Yeah.
Because really what I'm thinking of is in the book Burnout by Emily and Amelia Nagoski, they talk about learned helplessness. And I always thought of learned helplessness as, oh, you just can't help yourself. And what learned helplessness actually is if you put a rat in a cage and you shock the floor and you open the door, the rat will learn to run out. But if you put a rat in a bucket of water, it will swim and swim and swim until it realizes there's no escaping. And if you put that same rat in the room with the floor that shocks, and you open the door, it won't run out because it has learned that it
is not resourceful enough to get out. And
correct.
Yeah.
And so holding space for that trauma. And it is why those of us with privilege need to create more resources and more information and more awareness on how people can start healing if they don't have access to therapy or, you know, this information and this research. I've had people tell me, Bree, I've never heard of the word body grief until I found you, and it changed my life. That is, I know that other people have those same things within them. Or I'm like, I've never heard somebody say that before. That could help so many people.
Can we share the exercise that I had in mind?
I would love to.
So I usually use this again with entrepreneurs, but I want people to think of this in no matter what role. So if I use language that's speaking to entrepreneurs and pricing, just remember that this can be applied in any situation where you want to talk about your value, be it in relationship with another person or in a job where you want to negotiate salary or in your pricing as an entrepreneur. And it's very simple. Maybe you've heard it before, but it really comes down to building your confidence. And it's that like that self-esteem wound. And sometimes that, like, again, that can be that learned pattern. It can be something we repeat to ourselves over and over again. But we also have the ability to look at what value we bring into the world. And so I'll say it in an entrepreneur way, and then we'll try to apply it to a couple other things. But as Bree, let's say, if she was to do this exercise, if she really thought about all the ways that her clients' lives change in working with her, and was to list them out. So I recommend listing out 30, because the first 5 to 10 are easy. And the ones that you just, it's almost like a no-brainer to you. But that 25th, 26th, 28th, where you're digging a little bit more, is where the gold is and where you really learn new things about the value that you're bringing into their lives. And it's a well worth it exercise. And so same thing could be said if you're in a job. Think about all the ways you're impacting the company, your boss, your employees, your coworkers, you know, whoever it is. Just picture the different ways that you're impacting their lives. Are you saving money? Are they like, for Bree, are their clients walking around with more confidence so that they're able to approach their life in a different way? Are they able to heal wounds that have been caused by the diet industry for years and years and years? Are they able to look? One of the biggest things you did for me was being able to look at old pictures with new eyes and create so much healing around that, and so much healing going forward as I bravely get in front of a camera for something else, you know? And so you really want to get that specific of all the different ways that you're impacting whatever area of your life you're focusing on, how you're impacting others. And there's gold in there for our value. And I think of a parent, like if we really sat down and thought about that and provided value, that stay-at-home mom that you talked about, and really got clear on her value, she may have a different conversation the next time somebody says, oh, can you go do this for me, just because she's not working when she really is.
Yeah.
So I think it's a simple exercise, but we have to be willing to build up our value ourselves sometimes. You have listed a lot of quotes, and there's one, another person that I have mixed reviews on sometimes, but Mel Robbins. And she says, there's a, and I'm going to paraphrase, but there's a lot of people in your life who are going to undervalue you. Don't let one of them be you.
I look forward to the day that we have this conversation again. And it's like, oh, you know, this entrepreneur who is not problematic.
That'd be nice.
It'd be very nice. I love that. I also just wanted to put a caveat, because this, I mean, there's video, but they won't see it. When you said the stay-at-home mom who doesn't have a job, you used air quotes. So just quote unquote, doesn't work. Stay-at-home moms, I think, work the hardest of anyone and get paid $0. So, I mean,
as a working mom who, you know, knows I'm not capable of that job and therefore does work, I have so much respect and gratefulness for stay-at-home moms, or even my husband who carries more of that role in my life, that so grateful. There's no question.
Yeah. I could talk to you all day, and we've already talked so much today. How can people find you? How can people, someone's like, I want to work with Kelly, I'm an entrepreneur. How can they find you? How can they work with you?
Good question. My website is 238, the numbers 238accounting.com. And if you add a //SMA, that's how you get that archetype test. And that's free. I'm not going to spam you with a bunch of, you're not getting on a list where I'm contacting people all the time, but you'll get your top three archetypes, which is really the ones that impact you the most. I'm on Instagram. I think it's Kelly Marshall 8 is where I'm at. And I'm in Bree's follower list if you want to find me there. And I have a Facebook group, which is where I do most of my nurturing. And it's Prosperous and Profitable Conscious Entrepreneurs. And my business, I've been in a building phase in the last year a lot, but I'm feeling the need for community. So there's going to be a lot happening over there. We're going to be fun things happening over in that group. So I'd love to have people join me over there.
Amazing. I want to be in this group.
Come join.
All right. Well,
I didn't know if you're even on Facebook.
I would love to be a part of your community. I am on Facebook, but one of my advices to people is pick one social media. Like, you don't have to do them all. Yeah. You don't have to do the most, because if you have multiple, then you have to nurture multiple places. So, I think communities are best nurtured in a Facebook group. So, cannot wait. Thank you for being here today and for dropping all of this wisdom. We will link all of this in the show notes, and I'll have a post that goes on my feed, and I'll tag you in it and all the good stuff. So
thank you.
My
pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely.
Love talking about my favorite thing.
Me too. Friend, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Body Grievers Club. Like all of your other podcasting friends, we would ask that you like, share, subscribe, and give this episode to someone who you think needs to hear it.
We know that grief is tough, but we hope that this podcast helps you feel less alone. To learn more about body grief, check out our Instagram page at The Body Grievers Club.
And to learn how you can work with us today, be sure to check out the link in our show notes for the most up-to-date information. At the time of this recording, it is summer of 2023. We are preparing to launch our brand new program called the Body Image Vault. This program is going to contain jam-packed resources designed to help you expedite your understanding from how to move from body grief into body acceptance. So be sure to get on the wait list to get all of the details.
And remember, friends, no matter how big your body grief is, you're never alone when you're part of the Body Grievers Club.